Welcome to The Word at First Pres. The sermon you're about to hear is not part of a regular sermon series. It stands on its own and can be instructive to our Christian faith in its own way, even though it's not linked to other sermons. I hope you enjoy.
Genesis 6:11-22. Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight, and the earth was filled with violence. And God saw that the earth was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupt its ways upon the earth. And God said to Noah, I have determined to make an end of all flesh, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. Now I am going to destroy them all along with the earth. Make yourself an ark of cypress wood. Make rooms in the ark and cover it inside and out with pitch. This is how you are to make it. The length of the ark, 300 cubits. Its width, 50 cubits. And its height, 30 cubits. Make a roof for the ark and finish it to a cubit above and put the door of the ark in its side. Make it with lower, second, and third decks. For my part, I'm going to bring a flood of waters on the earth to destroy from under heaven all flesh in which is the breath of life. Everything that is on the earth shall die, but I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall come into the ark, you, your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives with you. And of every living thing, of all flesh, you shall bring two of every kind into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female, of the birds according to their kinds, and of the animals according to their kinds, of every creeping thing of the ground according to its kind, two of every kind shall come into you to keep them alive. Also, take with you two of every kind of food that is eaten and store it up, and it shall serve as food for you and for them. Noah did this. He did all that God commanded him. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Matthew 23:25-28. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you clean the outside of the cup and of the plate, but inside they are full of greed and self-indulgence. You blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup so that the outside also may become clean. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, which on the outside look beautiful, but inside they are full of bones of the dead and of all kinds of filth. So you also on the outside look righteous to others, but inside you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. This is the word of the Lord.
Well, good morning. I am so very happy that we can be here today. This is a celebration of our confirmands, and they are here to confirm their faith. This was a process that started back in September, and it of course resulted in many classes, retreats, conversations with your peers and with teachers. And what I want to do today is I want to talk to you about what this means to you, what this means to us as a church, and what it means to your faith in the future. And to begin, I actually want to take some time to tell you a little bit about my own confirmation process, what I went through when I was your age. So I grew up in a small town called Fredericksburg, Virginia, and I went to a church called the Presbyterian Church of Fredericksburg. This is it right here. It's a very old-looking church. I don't know if you can read that there on the side, but it actually says, it shows you like the name and when it was founded, all of that. And I've always found the name to be kind of funny, the Presbyterian Church of Fredericksburg. You know, normally when you name a church, you name it First Presbyterian Church of insert town here, like we're of Arlington Heights, right? And that way, when you found another church, right, you can just name it what? Second and third and fourth, right, as you go on. But I think that the people who founded this church were pretty confident, more than most, that their Presbyterian church would always and forever be the Presbyterian church in the town. That did not happen, but it's good to dream, right? Now, to give you a sense of why they thought they would always be the only Presbyterian gig in town, you need to know a little bit about my grandmother. This will help you kind of understand the context of things. So my grandmother came from a very prominent and wealthy family in Fredericksburg. Her grandfather, my great-great-grandfather, his name was Horace Lacey. He owned one of the largest plantation homes in Fredericksburg. It was called Chatham Manor. This is what it looked like. It's what you can go visit today. It's actually a national park that you can go to. And it has a lot of land that was connected to it behind it, many, many fields. This has a lot of history to it. Actually, what happened was my great-great-grandfather fought for the Confederacy. But then the Union came in and took over his house. It was their base of command when they were trying to get into Fredericksburg, and they would lob cannonballs over into it. Actually, back up to the church one real quick. So you see there in the, the church. So do you see in the pillar right there on the side, there's a little, you can see a little dot. That is a cannonball lodged in the pillar of the church from, it's on the very front there. You can see it right up near where the light is. And that was a cannonball that got lodged in there from when they were shooting at it from across the river from my grandfather's house. Abraham Lincoln actually stayed at my grandfather's plantation home at one point, and so you can go see where he stayed. Obviously, my great-great-grandfather was not super jazzed about Abraham Lincoln being there, but I think it's pretty cool. So, anyways, my grandfather Lacey, he was part of the Presbyterian Church of Fredericksburg, and you had to be part of the upper crust of Presbyterian society and just society in general to be there. And the way that they enforced this air of exclusivity was with something called pew rents. Have you ever heard of pew rents before? So a pew rent is where you pay a certain amount of money so that your family can occupy a pew in the church. And it's not the same rent for everyone up and down. The closer you are to the front, the more it costs. I've been thinking about bringing pew rents back, actually. I think it would be a very effective way of creating money in the church. And so pew rents, what it did was it prevented your average person on the street from coming in and just being part of the service. And it was well known that if you wanted to be part of the Presbyterian Church, that you needed to be well off. And so I think that the reason why they assumed it would always and forever be the only Presbyterian church in town is because it catered to the wealthy. And when you're catering to the wealthy, there's only going to be so many people who are going to join your church. In case you're wondering, by the way, the Lacey pew was four rows from the front. I tried to find a picture of the interior of the church. I could not. I have no idea who these people are. But that bride right there is right next to the Lacey pew. That is where it was. So I was like, that's what it was. Now, my grandmother was born in 1912. And she grew up at a time when pew rents were still in effect. Now, that was phased out in like the 50s and the 60s. They'd stopped doing that in most churches. They went to what we do today, which is like the tithing system. And my grandmother knew this, but by the time I was born, she was getting into the early stages of dementia in the 1980s, and she had forgotten about this fact. And so if she came to church and anybody was in that pew, she became irate, like lost it. So my dad would have to get there super early to get into the pew to save it, so that nobody would go in and take it over. And I think this is hilarious because my father, who isn't even a Christian, he was always at church 30 minutes early. He was there before everybody else, just waiting in the pew, and he was eagerly waiting for it to start. Not because he liked the church service. As he once said to me when I was a kid, I remember I looked up at him, he goes, "The sooner it starts, the sooner it's over." So, being that I had this long lineage in the church, there was obviously an expectation that my mother was going to bring me to church every week. And I was. I was there most Sundays. I can't say that I loved it, but I didn't hate it either. It was just kind of part of the routine. And what would happen is we would come in, and we'd go to the church, and then they'd have like a children's time, and they'd ship us off to Sunday school. And there we would learn all the stories that are palatable for children to learn in church. We learned about Jesus loves us. We learned about Moses in the burning bush. We learned about David and Goliath. And we learned about that story that every child knows. We read it this morning from Genesis. Do you have your bingo card? Noah in the ark. You got your bingo. Yeah, right there. Take it. You got it. You got one on that one. Genesis, Noah and the ark. Now, why do we read this story this morning? We read it because I don't know what you, confirmands, I don't know what you were taught when you were a kid about this particular story. But probably what you were told was that God, there was going to be a flood, and God told Noah to build a boat and to put all of the animals on the boat. Is that probably what you heard? All right. Now, Sam, what she read this morning got into a little more detail about it, right? And the detail is that the reason why God is flooding the earth is because God wants to commit mass genocide and basically wipe humanity off the face of the earth, right? Because we are evil. Now, that little detail is kept out of the children's version of things. And the reason why we read this is because I want to point something out to you, and I hope that you all spend some time talking about this, and that is that when you read the Bible, you learn about things that you are often not taught by other people, and those details matter. They change the way you look at a story. And so it's very important that you always read these things for yourself going forward. You need to read these stories on your own because it's not necessarily what you knew growing up, and it changes things. Now, when I was your age, I was told by my mother that I was going to go through confirmation. Now, we did it in seventh grade, and this is another point on your bingo card right here. So in seventh grade, if you were back at Easter, I told you that that's when I started swimming. So I began swimming that year. Bingo, you get it down. You're almost there, right? So I started swimming that year. And what that meant was is that I was never at church. I was either at a swim meet or I was practicing. So I maybe came to confirmation class generously five times the entire year that I was there. Now here, you couldn't get away with that if you just came five times. You wouldn't be able to go through the process. But in my church, it was totally and completely fine. Like, they let you through no problem. And so by the time I got to the end of the process, right, my understanding of Christianity, God, the Bible, it was no different than what I had learned when I was a little kid. Like, I still only knew those stories. But I did know one other thing, and that is what my mother told me, which is that if you finish the confirmation process, you get confirmed, it is now your choice whether or not you would like to go to church. That's what she told me. I was like, hey, that is awesome. I can't wait for that to happen. Now, why did she say that to me? She said that to me because many, many parents, they look at confirmation as a rite of passage. It's very similar to, do y'all have any Jewish friends? Okay, the bar mitzvah, the bat mitzvah, right? So what happens? You're 12, you're 13, you have the big party, right? All of that. The idea with confirmation is that you have hit this important milestone in your life. You're no longer a child. And now you can claim your own religious independence. Now, for my mom, I think the reason why she wanted me to go through confirmation, and she said that it was my choice, is because she was getting to a point where it was hard to force me to go to church, right? Like, at this point, you all know this, you're busy, right? You're starting to do other things. So she was getting to a point where she couldn't force me to go. And by saying, you're confirmed, it's now your choice, she gets off the hook and she doesn't look like a bad parent for not getting me to church more often. Now, this mentality, which is very, very common in the Presbyterian church at large, is the reason why 75% of youth in the Presbyterian church who are confirmed never return. Never darken the door again. This is part of the reason why we elongated the process. Because a lot of times the reason why people are getting confirmed is because their parents said, like my mom said to me, you're going to get confirmed, and that's what you're going to do. And so we push back to the point where you choose whether or not you want to join the church, because by 10th grade, you're acting more independently. It is truly your choice by that point, whether you truly want to join the church. You're confirming your faith today. Now, in case that was your MO in this, I don't want you to feel guilty about the fact if you were like, well, that was my plan to step out. That's exactly what I did. I was one of those 75% of kids. Like, you would not have guessed I was going to be a pastor based on my attendance record following confirmation, for sure. But if I'm being honest with you, the reason why I stopped coming to church after confirmation. Had a lot less to do with the fact that my mom told me it was my choice, and a lot more to do with the fact that I didn't really understand why church was all that important to me. Because here's the thing, when I came to church, it was super boring. Like, super boring, right? Like, I would listen to the pastor speak, and I could barely pay attention to it. Like, you're like, yeah, I get it, Alex, I know what you're talking about. I could barely pay attention. And when I could pay attention, I didn't understand what the pastor was talking about. And when I didn't understand what the pastor was talking about, it didn't really feel like it was all that applicable to my life. So what ends up happening is I have all these other things going on in my life, and all of a sudden, church very quickly found its way down to the bottom of my priority list. Now, I don't know if that's the way you feel right now, where you're sitting here and you're like, yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, I understand why you would say that. But here's the question you might be asking yourself, which is, well, how did you go from the 75% of kids who abandon the church to becoming a pastor? And I'll tell you what it is. Lack of job options, my friends. Lack of job options. Let me give you a little piece of advice. Choose your major wisely when you go to college. I chose to be a religious studies major. One of the few jobs you can do as a pastor with that. So, no. What happened is that I started going through my life. I started doing the things that were important to me. And what was important to me was school, swimming, friends, girls. That's what I cared about. Really, that was it. That was all I cared about. But then what happens is, as I get older, I start to feel that there's something missing from my life. Because I was doing all the things that people were telling me to do. I was out, you know, I was spending my time doing the things that people told me were important in my life. And everything that society tells you to do, I was doing all those things. But yet, I felt this deep sense of emptiness inside of me. This deep sense of emptiness. And I didn't really know what to do about that emptiness. But it was there, and it was becoming more pressing as I got older. And it had always been there, but by the time I was like a senior in high school, I couldn't really ignore it any longer. And I wondered, I remember I went to school and I look around and I was like, do my peers feel the same way that I do about this? And what I discovered is that in fact, they did. They were just becoming really, really good at numbing it out. So what you will find as you get older, as you get towards your senior year of high school, is that many of your peers, they're going to start experimenting with drugs and alcohol. Very common, psychologists will tell you, it's a very common thing that happens, this experimentation that occurs. In my school, I would say the vast majority, I had 90 people in my class, I would say 87 of them every weekend would go out, and it was Friday, Saturday, Sunday, drugs and alcohol the whole weekend. That was just the way they were. Now again, this is a natural part of experimentation, but I think that there's a reason why that experimentation occurs. And it occurs because there is something deep down inside of us. There's this deep emptiness, and they don't entirely know how to deal with it. And so in not learning how to deal with it, they find themselves in this situation where they're trying to numb it out all the time. It just becomes kind of part of what they do. They numb it out all the time because they don't know how to get rid of it. It becomes kind of overwhelming. And by the way, it doesn't end when you get out of high school. It continues into college. It continues into adulthood. What I see is that many, many adults, they spend their lives organizing their lives around suppressing that feeling of emptiness. It doesn't go away. And Jesus actually talks about this in the scripture that we read this morning. I want to take a look at that real quick. Jesus says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, which on the outside look beautiful, but inside they are full of the bones of the dead and all kinds of filth." I think this metaphor is a beautiful metaphor. You probably don't necessarily get what he's saying here, but let me explain it to you real quick. He's basically saying that you can look beautiful, put together, you can look kind of stunning on the outside, but on the inside you can essentially be dead. And I have found this to be true. Generally speaking, in life, the people who I meet who are the most put together, the people who seem to have it all figured out, they are the ones who feel the most empty on the inside. Generally speaking, that is what I have found to be true. And Jesus is telling us that by cleaning the outside, by making the outside look pristine, that's not going to change the inside. In fact, quite the opposite. If you want to change the outside and make it look better, you have to start with the inside. Let's look at what he has to say here. For you clean the outside of the cup and of the plate, but inside they are full of greed and self-indulgence. First, clean the inside of the cup so that the outside also may become clean. The idea being that if you only focus on what people can see, and that's what you clean up so that everybody sees this, right, a certain way, and you don't focus on changing yourself internally, you become what's known as a hypocrite. Because you heard him say that, right? He says that, hypocrite. Now, that word hypocrite, do you know where it comes from? It comes from Greek theater. That's the original use of it. And it literally means to wear masks. That's what that word hypocrite means, to wear masks. And so in Greek theater, the way that it originally worked was that they would put on a mask when they would act. So they would wear a mask like this, and that's how they would become a different character, right? Today, of course, the way they do acting is you embody the character, but they would literally wear a mask. And so by doing this, you would hide the person underneath and you could become somebody else. Make sense? Okay. Now, today, if I call you a hypocrite, is that a nice thing to say? No, it's an insult, right? But you have to realize that originally, when they used this word, hypocrite, back in those in that time, they had no negative connotation. Jesus is the first person to take this word and to turn it into not just an insult, but he's saying it as a way of being. What he's saying is that when you're a hypocrite, you're wearing a mask, you're pretending to be somebody else, and you're hiding the true person underneath. Now, the fact is, we all do this. We all do this. To some degree or another, we all do this. Because here's the thing. If everybody could see what you really think, if everybody could see how you speak and act when no one's around, if everybody could see what you do behind closed doors, they would have a very different opinion of who you are, right? I love how the way Chris Rock puts it, the comedian. He says, when you meet somebody for the first time, you're not meeting that person, you're meeting their representative. Which is true. You are. When you go out and you meet somebody for the first time, you are meeting a version of themselves, probably the best version they can put on, right? They're hiding all of that other stuff. And oftentimes, you're wearing what's called a mask of perfection. Because you're trying to get rid of all the imperfections, you're trying to smooth those over, and you're saying, I'm going to wear this. Whereas if we took that off and everybody could see what was underneath, it probably wouldn't be so great, right? Now, the church I went to when I was a kid, it was a church where it was very important to wear the mask of perfection. You come into church in your Sunday best, you go up to people, you shake their hands, you say, hey, it's great to see you, say hi to all the families, right? And there's nothing, by the way, intrinsically there's nothing wrong with that. It's good to be friendly, it's good to talk to each other, it's good to greet people, right? The problem at my church when I was growing up is that you could never talk about your struggles, you could never talk about what was hard in your life, you could never talk about the difficulties you faced. And I think this is why I was turned off to church when I was younger, because I came away believing that church was a place for perfect people. And because I was not a perfect person, I felt as though I didn't belong there. And so I left it behind. But that emptiness was still there. And over time, it got worse and worse and worse to the point where I was like, I got to do something to fill this void. And I had seen my peers, I'd watched them and what they were doing. And I knew that drugs and alcohol, that was only a temporary solution. And I had this vague sense that God had something to do with it. I wasn't sure what, but God had something to do with it. And so I started reading the Bible. I was like, well, let's see. People talk about this. I want to read the Bible for myself. So I pick it up. I start reading it. I start learning about God, Jesus, this Jesus guy. I start asking questions, getting answers. And what I discovered is something quite profound. What I learned is that the people who Jesus loved most were the people who wore their problems on their sleeve. The people who came to him and said, look, I'm hurting, I don't have it all together, I'm broken, and I need help. Those are the people who Jesus loved most. And I found it to be fascinating, because there was a big discrepancy between the Jesus I was reading about in the Bible and the church that I went to at home. These were two very different things. And what happened was I decided that I wanted to be a pastor because I wanted to create a church where people could come and they didn't have to wear the mask. They could take the mask off. They could say, this is who I am. This is all the stuff I'm dealing with. And we would sit there and we'd say, that's okay. And that is what I have tried to create in the time that I've been here. I hope that that's what we've gotten closer to than the church where you have to come in and wear this all the time. And so what is confirmation about? Well, confirmation is the beginning of this much larger process for you. But it is a day where I hope you know, and this is very important, hear this. If you've zoned out on me because you're like, it's boring, hear this last part, which is that the whole point of today is that you need to understand that confirmation is about knowing that you don't have to wear that mask anymore when you're in this place. In this place, you don't have to say that everything is okay. In this place, you don't have to pretend like everything is perfect. You can bring all your baggage in here, all your hurt, your pain, your disappointment, and you can let it all hang out because this is not a church for perfect people. This is a church for people who don't have it all figured out, who are trying to make their way through the world, who feel that emptiness inside of them, and they're trying to fill that void inside of their souls. If you all feel that inside of you, if that is the way you feel, and that's what you're trying to figure out in your life, you will always have a place here. So I want to say to you, congratulations on this first step in this process. I hope that you will be here through the next couple of years so that you can come to a point where you can make your own decision on whether you want to join this church. But I want you to know that we are proud of you, we support you, and you can take that mask off while you're in here. Amen.
Thanks for listening. And if you want to learn more about First Presbyterian Church of Arlington Heights, please visit www.firstpresah.org for more information on service times, directions, and to learn more about the First Pres family of faith.